Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Beasley switching it in! The U.S. go up! What a goal from Carlos Bocanegra!
Lloyd will try a long hit! What a goal from Lloyd! This is spectacular! It's hit with no regard for humanity! Is this the moment for Shaqiri? Yes, it is! Switzerland! And Shaqiri has scored in the 90th minute! That was worth the price of admission alone!
Is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Well, here's Glenn Davis, your humble host, but also our great producer, Andrew Carlson, behind the glass after the wheelhouse. This show is always brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. We got a show for you tonight. Sebas Ferreira, the biggest signing in Houston Dynamo history. That per the Houston Dynamo. Designated player combined with salary. He will join me on the show tonight. You'll get a really good in-depth interview with him. Houston Dynamo president John Walker on the show talking about the NWSL-CB, which he worked on. Great news for the NWSL and women's soccer. He'll talk about the Fubo deal as well. Kenny Bundy, this vital piece now that has been inserted into the Houston Dynamo, which is a proper reserve team at your facility next to the first team training field, not 6 hours away in the Rio Grande Valley like we were sold for so many years. Oh, it's just as good. No, it's not. There's a soccer community full of people who develop soccer players out in the community. They didn't buy it. I didn't buy it. Nobody bought it. It was a cost-saving move. This now, to have an under-23 team here in Houston, this opens whole new horizons for the Houston Dynamo. So we're going to go a good amount with Kenny Bundy on how it's crystallizing and what it looks like. And we're even going to ask him, when will we finally start producing some players for the first team? Because it's tough for us when we watch FC Dallas selling players to Europe. We see Kevin Paredes leaving DC United for $7 million. Hey, even San Antonio FC just sold a player. Jose Gallegos, a wonderfully talented young player from the USL Championship, and he's going to the Danish Super League. We will have Danish Dynamite with Jan Christensen tonight here. A big thank you to all of our sponsors, of course, the Daspit Law Firm, but also Advantage BMW in Midtown, Danish Inspirations Modern Contemporary Furniture, FM Kitchen and Bar Cactus, who presents Burning Topics, and Hugh O'Connor's Pub. All right, so before we get into U.S. men's national team talk, I just want to remind you today, Cameroon, the host nation, going down in penalty kicks to Egypt and Mo Salah. That sets up an AFCON semifinal, that sets up the final Sunday between Senegal and Egypt. So that's got a lot of Liverpool feel to it with Sadio Mane against Mo Salah. Here is the final miss that sent Egypt through. They would win 3-1 on penalties after extra time.
If Cameroon do not score now, it'll be all over. A last prayer from Onana. Will it be enough? Oh, it's all over. He misses. Cameroon are out. Egypt are through to the final.
Yeah, and boy, did he miss badly. The penalties were almost a bit of a travesty. Shout out to Sam Super Eagle. He called it. If it goes to penalties, Egypt will win. Well, Super Eagle Sam nailed that one. U.S. 3-0 over Honduras. We're going to talk about that tonight. I do want to get your phone calls at 713-780-3776. 713-780-3776. Now, there's a lot of debate on the fact that the United States played this game in St. Paul. Frigid conditions, people, you know, hey, the U.S. soccer, you're not confident that you have to play in that cold with Honduras there. Two Honduran players, I think, had hypothermia, including Romel Kyoto. But there has been a lot of debate about it, and I want to get your thoughts on it. What did you think about the U.S. playing in St. Paul? After all, Bolivia plays in La Paz at 11,824 feet at the Estadio Hernando Siles. Isn't that dangerous? Or Ecuador in Quito? Or what about the smog in Mexico City and the altitude? Or the high grass in Honduras and the dangerous heat? I mean, where do you draw the line? So was this really that bad? Was this a statement that U.S. soccer is insecure? No, I don't think so. I think it's, hey, we have to do everything possible to get to the World Cup. You know why? We didn't get to it the last time, and there's a thing called sponsorship dollars. And everybody forgets that. We were once criticized as not being good in the gamesmanship department. So was this gamesmanship in St. Paul? I don't know. A lot of reaction to it. I'm not sure I know the answer. 713-780-3776. I would like to hear from you, though, tonight. What are your thoughts on it? Plus, any of your other thoughts on this 3-0 U.S. win over Honduras. So, eighth minute, you get a goal from Weston McKennie. Great delivery from Kellen Acosta, who's come in the starting lineup. Seven changes for Berhalter. He was one of them for the injured Tyler Adams in midfield, who had a hamstring injury. 37th, you get a second from Zimmerman. And the 67th, he did not start the game. Christian Pulisic would come on 2 minutes after coming on as a second-half sub. He would score. Look, there is no doubt. The Hondurans were frigid. They may still be thawing out at this moment. They were frigid. And the climate 100% affected them. 100%. I mean, if you saw the game, you saw the amount of room the U.S. had to play soccer. This was the coldest match in U.S. men's national team history. 73% of the possession, 60-2 on shots. I don't think Honduras had a shot on goal. Albert Elias looked like a frozen, you know, he was frozen. Seven changes from the Canada match from Greg Berhalter. Luca De La Torre got a start from San Diego. His first World Cup qualifying start. Kept the ball moving nicely. Looked very tidy and sharp on the ball. Honduras did not have a shot on goal, as I mentioned. Walker Zimmerman comes back in the lineup. He gets the captain's armband. He comes in for Chris Richards. Has a great game. Has a goal and an assist. And leads from it. And there's one round to go now. March 24th, the U.S. will go to Mexico City. The 27th home to Panama, and then at Costa Rica. So 713-780-3776 is the number. I posed the question about, you know, the frigid conditions and what you think about it. I don't know. A lot of people speaking out about this and a lot of differing thoughts. Houston X Factor, Marlin says, not fair for Honduras, but then again, as part of home field advantage. The U.S. is playing, in a hot afternoon at Tegucigalpa under a 90-degree temperature with high humidity, dangerous at either extreme. Well, you could say that about Houston Dynamo games, right? And I do remember that. The grass was very high, and they played in the afternoon on purpose. Do you call it gamesmanship? Do you call it dangerous? Napoleon's Tomb, I'm fine with it. The Honduran Federation is known for playing their games on over 100-degree heat with lots of humidity, playing those games in the afternoon. If they want to create a home field advantage, that's their choice. The U.S. men's national team has the same choice. Yolomar said we won. Sam Mbonu, official, should have called the game off for safety. Jesse, as a guy that watches American football often, where playoffs usually have a game with freezing temperatures, I didn't see a problem with this. Home field, baby. Let's see. Frankie, 516. Good initiative, bad judgment on U.S. soccer's part. Chuchin said, when U.S. men's national team players are complaining about it, I don't think it benefits anyone. Game could have easily been won elsewhere. Well, so say you. Isn't that a little disrespectful to Honduras? I do know they're last in World Cup qualifying, but they're always dangerous. I don't think the U.S. was taking any chances. And I think there's too much from a sponsorship part behind this, which nobody really mentioned today. chances can't be taken? I don't think. 713-780-3776 is a number to call here on Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Let's hit up the phone lines. Let's start it off with Ray. Ray, what do you have on the U.S. men's national team?
Hey, Glenn. Appreciate the show. Appreciate the ideas. A couple of issues. Finnish adherence. It just seems like we're going to have to leave a midfielder out that deserves to be on the field. And given the options up front, I just don't see how this fits with the personnel we've got. Tim Way is great, but, you know, he's just got just as many mistakes in him as he does, you know, fabulous ability to get past somebody. And without a true number nine, and hopefully Pepe will be that guy, but just seems to me like having two up front and taking full advantage of the midfield players and options we've got, you know, with what we saw last night, I mean,
so Rick,
set pieces, you can leave them out of the...
All right, so we're having a little bit of trouble with Ray's line. It's kind of cutting in and out. I think he was alluding to the fact that maybe you play with two forwards. We're having to leave out a good midfielder in Kellen Acosta, or in this case he was in the lineup instead of Tyler Adams due to injury. The U.S. came out with Turner in goal, Anthony Robinson, Miles Robinson, and Zimmerman, the two center backs. Reggie Cannon was the right back. Acosta, McKennie, and De La Torre in midfield. De La Torre is now a nice option. Jordan Morris, Pepe, and Weah up front. Okay, I would just say this. This is still a maturing U.S. men's national team. The average age is 24, but, I mean, you look at the youth of this national team, and yes, the striker position is one of real concern, right? Because Ricardo Pepe and Jazzy Zardes. Now, Zardes can run the channels, a great team player, can bring other things. But honestly, you got to have a goal scorer in that position. You got to have somebody who can pick a ball up, create his own chance, get a small window to get a shot off, get turned on somebody, and win you a game that maybe you don't deserve to win. And I think the hope is Ricardo Pepe is going to grow into that. But you're very close to qualifying for the World Cup. I think Walker Zimmerman, for me, has really stood out. I think Acosta coming in the lineup gave you better delivery off set pieces. Weston McKennie has another good game, went off for Roldan in the 84th. His ability in the air. I think he's already got 8 national team goals. And he will, if his career goes a long time, that's a guy who's going to score 25, 30 goals for the U.S. national team as a midfielder. Luca De La Torre plays in the Netherlands, played at youth clubs like San Diego Nomads and San Diego Surf out there. Carmel, he's at Heracles in the Netherlands. And obviously we know the Netherlands, the emphasis on the technical side of the game, very, very technical player. Had a lot of room to play, so I'd like to see him in a differing environment. But on this night, very, very good. We can also talk Mexico as well if you want. We can certainly do that. And Mexico's 1-0 victory over Panama was not necessarily very impressive at home. There's criticism for Tata Martino. Mexico's currently third in the table. Canada on 25 points leads it. Most consistent. U.S. on 21. Mexico 21. Panama 17. Costa Rica 16. El Salvador effectively done, Jamaica done, Honduras done. So now it's a matter of the juggling of these top five teams and who's going to get in automatically and who's going to end up playing in a playoff game with that fifth place spot, which Costa Rica currently holds. That game, the U.S. and Costa Rica, could be very, very huge for Costa Rica. Could be for the U.S. as well if they don't take care of some business. A couple of interesting things. Rachel Violet will be on the show tonight. She has done a movie called Big Time. Big time soccer. The remarkable rise and fall of the North American Soccer League. Now, this is an incredible, incredible. I watched it today. She sent me it. This is an incredible sort of documentary on the NASL with tons of interviews. You know, Cruyff, Canalia come to America. Pelé comes. It blows up overnight. You don't have the game that we have now underneath. You don't have it in the grassroots in the suburbs at the time. It's all around ethnic areas and cities. The New York Cosmos are the anchor team, obviously, of the league. Pelé comes. All of a sudden, it's getting attention. People are going to games. They're not even really deeply embedded in soccer. Tampa's pulling in 40,000. Minnesota's getting big crowds. Tulsa loves their team, the Roughnecks. This is amazing. Shows you how Warner Brothers was involved. It shows you how overexpansion can be dangerous. But what it really tells us is that every soccer ball kicked here today has a debt of gratitude to the visionaries who started that league and all the players in it who then did all the clinics and all the things to help teach and mentor the game. All right, we'll take a break here. John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm will come back. We got Danish Dynamite. We'll continue to take your phone calls at 713-780-3776. And we will roll on here tonight with a bunch of great interviews. We'll take some of your calls in the next segment as well. 713-780-3776. You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Costa drives it in. McKinnon gets to it. There's the early goal.
This is Devo, Beautiful World, and that was Weston McKennie with a beautiful header in the 8th minute. That ended up being the game winner for the U.S. 3-0 over Honduras, 3-0 at Allianz Field in St. Paul, Minnesota. That was the third game in 7 days in World Cup qualifying. By the way, a lot of chatter today about that game. Maybe it shouldn't have been played there. I think it all comes down to dollars and sponsorship dollars when you make the World Cup. All right, time for Danish Dynamite. He's the headman of Danish Inspirations Modern Contemporary Furniture, the home of Stressless. He is Jan Christensen. He joins us now. Jan, how are you?
Hey, man, doing great. Man. Doing great. Great night for United States last night. We finally got the 3 points and that we hoped that I knew we were going to get. So it's looking good for the U.S.
In a good place right now on 21 points, second place behind Canada on 25. All right, so you got some interesting stuff on Christian Eriksen for us.
Yeah, I mean, I've been following Christian here, you know, and, you know, it's one of the most complicated transfers ever for a British club because of you getting a guy with has an ICE unit pending to his heart. And, you know, he's playing on his own risk. You know, there's no insurance on him, you know, so fortunately, you can afford that. That's a good news. But the story actually starts back on December 17th when Inter signed his contract off and tore it apart, and he was free to go. And then the next day, Thomas Frank, the Brentford coach, called Christian and said to him, "Hey, man, I would love to have you in the club when you're ready." And he knew he's been training. And Christian said, "Well, this is actually perfect way to get in shape for Qatar because I know or I believe I'm going to get 90 minutes every week and I can get in top shape and be ready for the World Cup." And of course, his contract only runs to June 30th. But after that, there's options and all that stuff. So hopefully he can play one more year or some. If he plays up to his old level, of course, Glenn, you know, there's going to be people out there wanting to sign him, you know. And I know Newcastle and several other clubs were interested, but Christian thought that this was the perfect one because Thomas Frank coached Christian when he played on the Danish national under 16. And so he knew Thomas Frank well, and he has four of his national teammates playing for Brentford. So I think this is a perfect scenario for him to get it back into the, of course, in the greatest league in the world as well, you know. So that's going to be awesome.
Couple questions for you, Jan, and a reminder to the listeners. The whole world saw Christian Eriksen collapse on the field. Essentially, he died for a set amount of minutes or something. He was revived.
Yes.
He has an apparatus in his heart. Now, isn't that apparatus that would start his heart if it stopped, isn't that something you had told me that was banned from anybody being able to play in the Serie A because
banned,
of that?
It's banned in Italy. It's banned in Italy. And okay. all the other European leagues approve it as soon as you've gotten that doctor's clearance. And supposedly one of the best heart doctors in London has been examining him left and right, and he says he's ready to go.
And Brentford also.
Once again?
Go ahead, Jan.
Yeah, so I mean, he plays on his own risk, and you know, he's playing to get Brentford to stay in the Premier League.
Yeah, and remind everybody, Brentford's got a team full of Danish players as well, not only a Danish coach. So this would be a very comfortable environment for him to make his comeback and get himself fit again, right?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, I mean, four of his international teammates plays for Brentford. You know, Mathias Jensen, Christian Nørgaard, and Mathis Sanka Jorgensen, and then the goalie Jonas Løssel. They all play with him on the Danish national team. So it's going to be very. I mean, but you can imagine the whole press will be following this. Already, Brentford's club was sieged by foreign journalists on Monday when they thought Christian was arriving, but he's not arriving before Sunday because of COVID restrictions. So he'll be there on Sunday, and he'll be practicing with Brentford on Monday. So you can imagine the press and all the Brentford fans. He's already chosen number 21, so they sold the first 5,000 shirts already, and with Eriksen at number 21, yeah.
So it's a great signing for them for a lot of reasons. It's a great signing for him. It sounds like a match made in heaven. And, of course, he wants to get back to the Danish national team and go to Qatar. Denmark has already qualified. Jan, tell us what's going on over at Danish Inspirations Modern Contemporary Furniture, because it is the place furniture.
Danish Inspirations has, of course, the Stretchers, which is our main, most amazing, comfortable chair in the world. But we got a few $100 off that. And we have an incredible floor sample sale right now because we're making room for another new arrivals and we are putting a big remodeling in the store. So we need to get rid of a lot of floor samples. And the good news is that's stuff that you can get right away. So people just come over, man, and check those floor samples out. There's some really good deals there.
And you can also go to DanishInspirations.com, right?
That's right. Also that, yes. And if there's a game on, we have it on the TV. And we are excited for the United States, and hopefully the United States and Denmark will get in the same group at the World Cup.
There you go. And you can go in there. Jan will talk soccer with you all day, too, as well as furniture. So it's Danish Inspirations, yeah. Modern Contemporary Furniture. Jan, give us the address on Fondren, please.
And remember, yeah, we are red, we are white, we are Danish dynamite. DanishInspirations.com. Thank you, Glenn. Great, great show as usual. Thank you, man.
He's the one and only Jan Christensen. And boy, I'll tell you what a longtime supporter of soccer in Houston, soccer on the show. We've had some pediatric cancer events over at Danish Inspirations, Modern Contemporary Furniture. We are very grateful for Jan Christensen and all his contributions, not only to this show, but more importantly, to the overall soccer community. All right, let's play a soundbite here. Professional producer extraordinaire Andrew Carlson, Greg Berhalter on playing Honduras in a frigid environment.
What I would say is that we provided Honduras and their staff and the referees with warm weather gear. We provided them with head gear and, you know, trying to make it a safe environment for them to play in. You know, when we go down to those countries and it's 90 degrees and 90% dew point and it's unbearable humidity and guys are getting dehydrated and cramping up and getting heat exhaustion, you know, that's the nature of our competition. When we schedule this game in this location, you know, you have to go by average temperatures, daily average temperatures. And it was the best guess. We wanted to minimize travel. We knew we were going to be playing in cold weather in two of the games. And we figured to do it in the third game as well instead of switching climates. A cold spell came through, and it's something we can't control. But all we can do once that happens is try to mitigate the risk by having warm weather gear and going out there and competing. And we did that.
All right, so that was U.S. manager Greg Berhalter. Give me your thoughts, 713-780-3776. We can talk about Mexico as well, who struggled to get a 1-0 victory in their game against Panama and Coco Carrasquilla. So Berhalter there explaining, look, you're playing in St. Paul to get an advantage. You're playing in Mexico City, if you're Mexico, to get an advantage. Altitude, smog, stuff that people aren't used to. Now, you can tell me what's dangerous. I don't know who's, you know, altitude in Bolivia. I mean, if you've ever watched a game when Bolivia plays at Hernan, what's the name of the stadium again? Estadio Hernando Siles, after the former president. It's at 11,824 feet. I remember my first ever calling of the Copa America and Bolivia playing there. And they had a guy named Juan Baldavieso. And, you know, 6 minutes into the game, because of the altitude and the thin air, I'm realizing, Jesus, this guy is looking to shoot from just inside the halfway line because the ball is moving so unnaturally. I never saw anything like that in my life. This is on TV, calling it out of a studio for Fox. So, I don't know. You tell me. Is this unfair? Is this gamesmanship? I don't know. If this is unfair, then it's unfair Mexico playing all their games at Azteca. So I don't know where you draw the line on this. It was frigid. It was cold. And it did affect the Hondurans. There's no question. You could see it 2-3 minutes into the game. You probably saw it in warm-ups if you were at the game. There was a big crowd there. Apparently the field was warm to 55 degrees because they have a heating system under it. So I think you got to factor these in. But the biggest thing you got to factor in is the financial side of this and not qualifying for the World Cup if you're the United States. You can't miss out on that sponsorship dollar. You can't miss out now with this young team. The extra jolt that the game gets nationally here in the U.S. with U.S. participating in Qatar. And I think that's one that was missed today by everybody, is the financial side of this. And they're not taking any risks. I hear everybody, yeah, oh, it's Honduras. You could have beat them in Florida, whatever. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's a little disrespectful to Honduras. We're in second place. Haven't necessarily played great. Got a lot of great young talent. It's a great time for United States soccer. Mexico hasn't played great. Tata Martino's got pressure working with that federation. You know, how long are we going to hear about Chucky Lozano and Tecatito Corona? There's no danger coming out of midfield. I mean, they're having to play Andreas Guardado there to be a playmaker at his age. He's not going to be around forever. They got their problems. Panama and Costa Rica are trying to make it. El Salvador got a nice jump from Hugo Perez, the former U.S. men's national team player. Jamaica's crashed and burned. Honduras has crashed and burned. I mean, the only team that really doesn't have a problem is Canada. And it's a new Canada. And it's a Canada getting results without Alphonso Davies. And it's a Canada that pretty much knows who they are. Team that's very dangerous to counterattack. They're going to scratch and claw. All you have to do is look at the Canada game that the U.S. lost and the time they had on the ball in that game, and then look at the game against Honduras and look at how much room they had to play. I mean, it was so vivid. We could all see that. All right, 713-780-3776. Now, the other thing is Greg Berhalter made 7 changes. He dropped Christian Pulisic from the starting 11. Here's what Berhalter had to say on that. Pulisic would come in the second half and score.
You know, decisions like that are never easy. We still, you know, the pregame conversation with him was you're still going to affect the game, just in a different role. And, you know, we had to do what we thought was best for the team and also put Christian in the best possible position to make an impact. And he did that today, and that's all you can ask of a player.
All right, so Christian Pulisic comes on 2 minutes and he scores. We were all critical. People were critical of him in the Canada game. The U.S. couldn't penetrate out wide with their two outside backs joining in. They couldn't get behind Canada. They gave up the poor first goal in that game off a very poor goal kick from Matt Turner, which turned into a comedy of errors in very, very cold conditions in Canada.
And once you go down 1-0 to Canada up there, I mean, they were kicking, clutching, grabbing. They were like a pack of wolves getting pressure on the ball. And the U.S. didn't have an answer for it. And Canada got the right type of referee on that day as well, a guy that was going to let the game play. All's fair in love and war. U.S. didn't deal with it, couldn't break them down. Canada got a very well-deserved win. We're very dangerous on the counterattack. And that despite the fact that the U.S. had the ball for the majority of the game and had the territorial play. The end of the day, the play in the final third wasn't good enough. Couldn't break them down. Couldn't create chances. One great save from Milan Borjan. Oh, this is The Clash, One More Time. It's a great song. All right. Coming up in the next segment, we're going to go into, and I'm going to tell you, you got to go and see this. This will be down at the Post this weekend, the International Sports Film Festival. It will air the movie. It's called Big Time Soccer, Remembering the Rise and Fall of the NASL, which was the North American Soccer League. Man, this brought some amazing memories back to me. We had two teams in Houston that were in the North American Soccer League. Houston Stars for 1 year in 1968, and then the Houston Hurricanes in the 70s with Kyle Rowe. But very different times. Incredible movie to watch to put it in the context of where the game is today in the U.S., where it's played at the youth level in the suburbs now, when back then it was only in and around ethnic pockets and cities. And by the way, I'm going to say this right now. Anybody that works in Major League Soccer or the NWSL or the USL, this movie is required viewing. It's called Big Time Soccer, The Remarkable Rise and Fall of the NASL, and it was produced and directed by Rachel Violet. All right, we'll take a break. It's brought to you by Danish Inspirations Modern Contemporary Furniture and our great friends at Advantage BMW in Midtown. Get down there. Say hello to Justin. Say hello to Steven. They'll take you through sales, service, finance. It can be done very easy. It's Advantage BMW Midtown. We'll take a break. We're coming back with more.
This is Heisman Trophy winner, College Football Hall of Famer Eddie George, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. We roll on tonight. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter at Glenn Davis Soc or at Soccer Matters GD. All right, presenting sponsor of this show is John Daspit, the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. You call them at 713-322-HURT. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys, big soccer fans. You get in a car, boat, motorcycle accident, you need a personal injury attorney. There's none other. It's the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-HURT. They get soccer on the airwaves. All right. The next interview is a very important one here because this weekend, the International Sports Film Festival is taking place down at the Post. By the way, if you want information on the times of all the events and movies, it's ISFFH.org, International Sports Film Festival. One of the films is called Big Time Soccer, The Remarkable Rise and Fall of the NASL, which was the North American Soccer League, which ran from 1968 to its closure in 1984. We had two Houston pro teams that were in that. 68 for 1 year, the Houston Stars played at the Astrodome, and then the Houston Hurricanes, who also played at the Astrodome in the 70s and had players like Kyle Rote Jr., Kai Haskeby. Rachel Violet's father, and Rachel's the producer and director of this film called Big Time Soccer, The Remarkable Rise and Fall of the NASL. Rachel Violet's father was the legendary Dennis Violet, one of the all-time leading goal scorers for Manchester United. She put this film together because as a young kid, she was around her father, who was the coach of the Washington Diplomats. She knows the whole story of the North American Soccer League. This movie, for me, is 100% required viewing for anybody that works in Major League Soccer. If you are not watching this, you are not putting into context what is currently going on. Because every ball kicked today in MLS draws a direct line back to this league and all the other pro sports leagues that has come before it. Here's my interview with Rachel Violet, the producer and director of the movie called Big Time Soccer, The Remarkable Rise and Fall of the NASL. Well, Rachel, the first thing, I do want to say this to the Houston listeners here. We have had two teams in the North American Soccer League from 1968. We had the Houston Stars and then the Houston Hurricanes were in it. Your new movie, Big Time Soccer, The Remarkable Rise and Fall of the North American Soccer League. For full disclosure, Rachel Violet's father was the legendary goal scorer for Manchester United, Dennis Violet, who was the coach of the Washington Diplomats. He also coached the Jacksonville T-Men. He was at the New England T-Men as well. So, you know, through your eyes, this was kind of a bit of a passion piece here because you lived this through your father and your connection to the North American Soccer League.
Yeah, very lucky to have lived this, as you did as well. And those memories of the NASL and attending the games and the after parties, and they've stayed with me my whole life. I don't even think there's been a week that's gone by in my life where I haven't thought about those years of the NASL. And those players, the coaches, the owners, they were our heroes growing up. And the caliber of soccer was so high, and the games were so exciting, and they had so many fun events before, during, and after the games. It was just a brilliant time, and I just had this sort of idea in the back of my head for a long time, wanting to do the film. And then I got a call from Bobby Moffitt one day. He's like, "We're having a 50th reunion, NASL reunion in Dallas, and would you like to come down and maybe do a documentary?" And I said, "Well, funny you should say that. Yes, I would love to." So that's kind of how it all got started. But yes, it was a passion project. And I know for a lot of the guys that played in the league and coached in the league, those were some of the best years of their lives as well. And so, yeah, it's just something that I had to do. And it was wonderful kind of reliving those years in these interviews.
She's Rachel Violet. She's a producer, director. It's called Big Time Soccer, The Remarkable Rise and Fall of the NASL. And thank you for sending it to me because I completed watching it today before this interview. A lot of things strike me. The undying belief that soccer could make it in this country by a lot of these owners and Phil Woosnam. The other part of it is that at the end of this movie, I'm just going, God, I'm thinking of myself personally as a kid who watched the Cosmos and then ended up playing against a lot of these guys. And that thread goes directly to the success of Major League Soccer now and to everything that goes on youth soccer fields across America.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of that has to do with the NASL, but also what happened, even though the league unfortunately folded in 1984 for a few reasons, which we go over, talk about in the documentary. But so many of those coaches and players stayed heavily, heavily involved with the game. And whether it was through playing and coaching in the ASL, which you were a part of, the American Soccer League, forming new leagues, obviously youth soccer, soccer camps, onto getting the World Cup here in 94. So the legacy continued, the work continued. And I think that's why we are where we're at, or one of the reasons why we're at.
Yeah, that's a great point you make, Rachel. And let's, I do want to mention, listen to the stars and the names that came over here. You know, the likes of Pelé, Giorgio Canalia. You had Rodney Marsh from Queen's Park Rangers coming over. You had Nenny Kubias, who ended up staying in America with Fort Lauderdale, one of the biggest goal scorers in the history of the World Cup. I mean, George Best. I mean, on and on they go. And, you know, it is remarkable that level of star, that quality, that celebrity was here. Franz Beckenbauer, Gerd Müller. I mean, we can go on and on.
Johan Cruyff.
Thank you.
Who loved the NASL. Yeah, I know. It's incredible. I mean, when you really think about it, just soccer went from kind of 0 to 200 miles an hour in a matter of a few years. And they all really love playing in the league. They love being in America. I mean, that's one of the reasons my dad came over. He toured America during when he was with Manchester United in the 1950s. They came over, they toured America. He fell in love with the country. So when the opportunity, you know, arose to come back here, he did. And he loved America. All those guys, they love playing here.
You know, for the American player, it was a different story. There were two that had to be on the field at all times. It went to three. And in the movie, you depict it very well, because guys like Giorgio Canaglia, the great Italian striker for the Cosmos, he would get naturalized and he would count as one of the American players. You know, so it wasn't the easiest at times. Chicago and Lee Stern did use, like, Rudy Glenn and Charlie Ficus. I remember those guys getting a lot of playing time, but it really was a league at the time that did not have grassroots support. The game wasn't in the suburbs in America. It was all around ethnic pockets and cities.
Yeah.
And then to think where it is now and where youth soccer is, and we got national team players coming from Alabama. Do you ever think of it in that context, just how different it is now when it comes to the support of the game at the grassroots level?
Absolutely. And I think the NASL did a great job with getting, you know, taking soccer to the suburbs of the United States. And a great example of that was when my dad's team, who he was coaching with Noel Cantwell at the time, the New England team, and when they moved to Jacksonville, Florida, of all places. And I remember kids that I went to school with at the time, I think I was third, fourth, fifth grade, sixth grade. A lot of them had never seen a soccer game before, had never kicked a ball, had never been to a soccer camp. And within a matter of, you know, months of the team being there, they've got their team end shirts on, they're going to camps or going to games or falling in love with the sport. So that's just an example right there of one city where the NASL had a huge impact. And now North Florida, I mean, soccer is just booming there. And I know that a lot of pockets of the country, that same thing happened. So,
yeah. And I think that's the other amazing thing, is just how many of these great players and people stayed around to just continue to blossom the game and continue to blossom the game to this day as well. You know, for me, growing up watching the Cosmos, I mean, that was a huge part of my player development, because it was simply being in a live stadium, watching these superstars. We'd see Mick Jagger up there. We'd see the guys from Zeppelin. We'd go crazy, you know, and then we're watching Pelé and Canaglia. And it was a happening. Tell me about the happening side of it, too, because that was part of it. You were convincing people to come to these games that really didn't know the ins and outs of the sport necessarily.
Well, exactly. And I just want to say, you hit on something huge, because Brandi Chastain talks about this in the movie, how the San Jose Earthquakes were her teachers. And she would go to the games and she'd watch George Best and she'd watch all these other guys do certain things. And you were, I'm sure, the same way with the Cosmos. So they were teachers for millions of kids in this country, because the caliber of soccer was so high. So kids were really learning from the best in so many instances. So, but yeah, it was happening. Teams like Tampa Bay, the Rowdies, all those pregame like festivities, you know, you'd have your halftime. It could be anything. You could win a free car, you know, by kicking a ball in a certain target.
And all these crazy, really cool promos
like that. Yeah. They'd have, you know, guys in parachutes coming down with soccer balls to put on the halfway line to start the game. Then of course you had the after game concerts. Right? Do you remember those?
Where, absolutely.
Big name, the Beach Boys, Dionne Warwick. Yeah, they would come and perform after the game. So it was definitely, the games were big events. They weren't just soccer games. They're kind of like mini Super Bowls a little bit.
Now you just bring up a great point. Do you think we need a little bit more of that showmanship in MLS now? You know, do you think certain markets could use a little bit more reaching out a little bit out of the concentric circle and doing a couple riskier type of promos that are fun related like that?
Why not? Right? Yeah. Why not? Yeah. I think what I would love to see kind of across the board, and this is one of the things that made the NASL so great, was how accessible the players were, how approachable the players were in the NASL. And I'd love to see maybe a little bit more of that in soccer in general. I think would make a huge difference.
We definitely need that.
Why not? A little more showmanship. Why not?
We definitely need that in our market here in Houston. And I think things are turning in a better direction with the new owner, Ted Siegel. But we definitely need that because community outreach can't stop. And then I think, you know, you think about now how much more competition you have with other sports, with lifestyle, with computers, with phones. You got to be out in the community.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. That 100%. I used Miami. I lived in Miami for 15 years, and that's just an example. So many other sports to compete with and so much to do. And so I think you've got to kind of think outside the box sometimes with soccer and make it more accessible to the community. And I think that goes a long way. If kids and families are meeting players, and there's that likability factor, they want to go watch them, right? So I think that would be something that I think would really benefit soccer.
Rachel Violet. She's the producer director. It's Big Time Soccer, the remarkable rise and fall of the NASL. Totally 100% endorse this. I actually think, Rachel, and I'm going to repeat this, but I think this should be required viewing for everybody that works in Major League Soccer. I kid you not. And the USL. I really think it puts a lot of things in context. It reminds you how we got here. It reminds you the effort, the grassroots type of stuff, which can sometimes get lost in the commercialism of the game today.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for that. Yes, the grassroots thing. I think that's probably one of the, if not biggest legacy of the league, especially early on in the late 60s or early 70s, mid 70s, the grassroots outreach was just huge. And the guys, I don't think they even got paid for it, actually. Blood, sweat, and tears. So, yeah, we owe a lot to them for that.
So the process of doing this, I mean, it must have been fun. You had great interviews with the likes of Rodney Marsh, Ray Hudson, Werner Roth, I thought was exceptional, very well-spoken guy.
Yeah.
You know, on and on with everybody who's in it, a lot of the owners, Lee Stern. You know, putting it and piecing it together, how long did all of this take? And is that something, that process, the editing and everything and the storyline, is that obviously it's something you enjoy doing?
Oh, I love it. Yeah, I love, I did all the story editing, and obviously directed and produced it. I mean, I love that. And that's what I did during lockdown. I mean, that's how I spent my, thank God.
You got something out of it then.
Yeah, I did. I was actually really, really busy, thankfully, during that time. But no, it was a thrill for me. And piecing it together was hard. I mean, it was really, really hard. What do you put in? What do you leave out? I mean, there were some gut-wrenching decisions that I had to make, which is why I'm wanting to possibly do a part two to this, because I've got so much great footage still left and I don't want it to stay in the can, so to speak. So, but it was a thrill for me, and Rodney, interviewing him in Tampa was just a blast. It was hysterical, the whole thing. Ray,
what a showman too. Not only a great player, but what a showman.
I love him. Very naughty, but I love him. And it was just meeting all my
heroes.
You
could do the X-rated version of the rise and fall of the NASL also, you know.
Yeah, I know. Right. Oh, for sure. but just the stories, some of the after parties, talking to Rodney and things, which are in, you know, the PG version is in the film. So, it was really wonderful for me to interview so many of my heroes. It was great reliving those years. Amazing.
Well, Rachel, congratulations. It's a great watch. I highly recommend it. It's Big Time Soccer, the remarkable rise and fall of North American Soccer League. And if you're somebody that's playing soccer in the United States now, you are directly rooted to the North American Soccer League and this movie that Rachel has put together. Rachel, thanks so much for coming on. Always appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
And I want to remind people, her father, one of the greatest goal scorers ever for Manchester United. And you know what? You ended up in tennis, by the way.
Yeah, I love soccer, played both for a while, but did. I ended up in tennis and went to University of Miami, go Canes, and went on the tour for a little bit. But I studied film, actually, in college, and always wanted to do this. And yeah, but tennis was fabulous to me. It was great to me.
Yeah, you knew it. You knew it was coming. Rachel, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks so much, Glenn. Appreciate it.
So that was Rachel Violet. Amazing film there. She actually told me she's got so much more footage. There may be a part two to this. I say bring it on, Rachel. Like I said, this is required viewing for me, for anybody that works in Major League Soccer. Context is important. The amount of people that pioneered, visioned the game out back then, and basically said no to soccer becoming a big part of the sporting landscape in America is remarkable. And let's not forget, again, a reminder, there was no soccer in the suburbs. It was all played in and around ethnic areas around big cities in America, New York, Boston, St. Louis, Los Angeles. It was not in the suburbs. And to think where we are now, where you can have a national team starting center back playing in Germany from Alabama named Chris Richards, is pretty remarkable. All right, Advantage BMW Midtown, get down there. Ask for Justin, ask for Steven, get yourself in a sedan, get into an X5 SUV. Advantage BMW Midtown, the only place to go. Big supporters of Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. So get down there, get yourself in the ultimate driving machine. They'll take you through sales all the way through to service, buy or lease. It's Advantage BMW Midtown. We'll take a break. We got more to come.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than two decades of experience, with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com. Upwork.com.